Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Maseches Chulin Daf Peites. We begin on the very last line of Peches Amud Beis. And this connects back to yesterday, where Rava teaches us that Bishar and the merit of Avraham Avinu, our holy ancestor, is expression of great humility. Vanoichi Afar Va'efar are merely dust and ashes. In that merit, we, as a nation, were zeichet to get two special mitzvahs corresponding to dust and earth and ashes, the ashes of the Paraduma, and the offer that the Saita drinks. In connection to that, further tells us Rava, V'amar Rav, on the very last line. Bishar she'amar Avraham Avinu, in the merit of Avraham Avinu's refusal to take, to keep possessions that he felt were not rightfully his. This was when he miraculously won over the kings, and he retrieved Lot and all the people of Sodom that were taken captive with all their possessions. And after the king of Sodom came out to celebrate, to greet him, to show appreciation, and to offer him a deal, he says, Avram, you keep the... give me back the people. Hanefesh, ten li hanefesh, v'ruchush, and the possessions, all the loot that's rightfully yours. V'ruchush kach loch, and he says, no, I'm not going to keep anything. It's not mine. Turn to the next page. And he says, to the extent, like, I'm not going to keep even a string, even a shoelace, except for what, you know, the people already consumed, that's retrievable, but imi chud v'atzrichnal, even from anything from a string to a shoelace, I will not keep. In the merit of that super honesty, zochu banav l'shtei mitzvahs, his descendants, his children, Klal Yisrael, was zochu to two special mitzvahs. One that relates to strings and one to straps. First is the tzitzis, l'chut shel tcheles, the blue string of tcheles, of tzitzis, ritzur shel tefillin, and the strap that is used to tie the tefillin. So we got those two special mitzvahs on account of Avraham Avinu's high level of honesty. And these mitzvahs, aside from providing us with eternal opportunities, eternal reward, we have benefit in this world as well. How's that? Says the Gemara, Bishlema, I understand, Ritzur shel tefillin, the tefillin strap, ksiv, it says, regarding tefillin, that it scares off our enemies. Ksiv ro kol am ya'aretz, all the nations of the land will see your tefillin, kishem Hashem nikra lecha, the name of Hashem is called upon you, rests upon you. They'll be gripped with fear, says Rashi. That's the Anno, that's the immediate benefit we have in this world, protected from the enemies on account of the tefillin. Because Kishem Hashem Nikro Alecho refers to the tefillin, resting on our heads. V'tanya, we have a brisa, in fact, Rav Elazar Gadol Omer, that this pasuk, the Shem Hashem Nikro Alecho, refers to Elo tefillin Shebarosh, tefillin on our heads. Okay, granted. So we have benefit in this world from our tefillin. But where do we have, you know, what's the benefit in this world that we get from the tzitzis? The sanya. We have a raisa, Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi had a question. Why blue? Why was the color blue chosen for the mitzvah of tzitzis? You know, to be wrapped around the white strings. Why blue? Manishtana tcheles mekol hatzivoinen. Why blue? More than any other color. Because blue makes for that correlation, that connection between us to Hashem, and vice versa. Ripnei, because shetcheles doim liyam, the blue-green color of tcheles reminds you of the sea. It's similar to the color of the ocean. V'yam doim lirukia, and the sea is a similar color to the sky that we see, right? Urukia Dome 11 Saper. And the rakia has a similar color to the Evan Sapir, very special, exquisite stone. The Evan Sapir, and that stone, Doim Lekisei HaKavod, is reminiscent in its color to the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of Hashem in Shemayim, the Chsiv, as it says in the Pasuk, Vayiru Es Elokei Yisrael, the elders had a vision of Hashem, V'tachas Raglav, and beneath him was like the color of Livnas HaSapir. It says that the Livnas HaSapir was Ke'etzem HaShamayim L'toyar. So the color of the Shamayim is similar to the Sapir. And then we have the correlation between the Sapir to the Kisei HaKavod. That's the next pasuk, Ksiv. This is a pasuk by Yecheskel. In his vision, he testifies that the Kisei of Hashem is like the Evan Sapir. Uksiv Kamari, Evan Sapir, like the appearance of the Evan Sapir, is the Dmus, the form of the Kisei. That explains why Hashem chose the color blue to place on the tzitzis. Why? Rashi explains. Kadosh Baruch Hu mistakel b'kisei HaKavod shelo, when Hashem peers at the Kisei HaKavod, which is similar, as we said, to the color of the tzitzis. Nizkar b'mitzvah zushi k'negel kol mitzvah Hashem, reminiscence about mitzvah tzitzis that we keep, and that evokes compassion and kindness and blessing from Hashem. Amar Abba, what more do we learn from the episode with Avraham Avinu? He offered everything back except for what was consumed by the warriors, right? Amar Abba, Kosha Gezel HaNechal, very, very difficult to do teshuvah on Gezel HaNechal, on stolen goods that were consumed, that are gone. Shafilu Sadiqim Gmur, even the greatest tzaddikim, like Avraham Avinu, Einam Yicholim Lachziro, they have no way to return it. Shenemar, Beladai, look, I'm offering you everything back, even the strings and the shoelaces, except for what the warriors ate, Rakash or Achlan Na'arim. So that I can't return. So one must be careful. One must take great care before he takes, before he consumes, before he spends, that it's really his, rightfully his. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum, he quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, Kol machem shata moitzei dvarav, shel Rabbi Elazar bnoi, shel Rabbi Yitzchak Lidi b'Hagada. You know, whenever you encounter the words of this great man, Rabbi Elazar, the son of Yitzchak Lidi, in matters of drasha, of Haggadah, of inspiration, of asay aznocha kafar cheses, it's worthy of listening. Form your ear like a cheses, like a funnel. Listen up. Okay, so here's one example of what he says. The pasuk says, Hashem endears us. Hashem desires it, loves us. Loy mi rubchem michol amim chashak Hashem b'chem. It's not because of your multitudes. It's not because you're bigger than the other nations that Hashem chooses you and likes you. So here comes his explanation. Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael. It's more than just about numbers. Hashem tells us, Chishkani b'chem, I desire you, because you're close to me. You're humble to me. You don't take credit for your for your successes. Shafilu b'sho, shani mashpia l'chem gedula. Even when I do give you success, greatness, bracha, atzlacha, you think, okay, that would turn you into haughty people, proud people. No, atem mamatin atzmechem lefanai. You lower yourself, you humble yourself before me. Now, how does this fit with the words loy mi rubchem, says Rashi? Lefi she'ein atem marben atzmechem, like, marben besimcha, right? To increase. You don't lift yourself, you don't take the credit. You're not walking around proud. El mematin, rather, you feel more and more humble. Why are we deserving Hashem's bounty? Right? That's the proper perspective, proper attitude of a servant of Avid Hashem, a Yid with a proper perspective, proper clarity. When he gets bracha, when he gets hatzlacha, right? Like Yaakov Avinu said, right? Kotoyti mikolach hasodim. Getting chesed from Hashem is an expression of closeness, and if anything, you feel more subtly, subordinate and cleaving and connected to the source, to Hashem. You feel less and less of sort of separate and, you know, independent and more connected. So that's the point. By Klal Yisroel, we're not walking around proud and haughty. Ella, right? For example, when I gave success to Avram Avinu, Amar Lefanai, instead of being proud and all full of himself, Chas v'Shalom, he says to me, if it's up to me, I'm just dust and ashes. It's all Hashem's bounty, Hashem's kindness. Likewise, L'may Sheva Arayn, what do they say? Amru, they said, V'nachnu ma, what are we? We're nothing, as far as we're concerned. David HaMelech experienced success. What does he say in Tehillim? I'm no more than just a snail. Amar v'nechi telas v'leish. That's by Yisrael. Aval oibdike chavim, but by the goyim, it's just the opposite. Enekin, it doesn't work like that. When they taste a little success, suddenly they're all over the place, all full of themselves. Nasatik dulul Nimrod. I gave leadership and success to Nimrod. What did he do? He rebelled. Amar, he says, oh, we're going to build that great tower, right? Amar hava nivnulon ir. By Parai, the same story. Le Parai, Amar, he says, mi Hashem, who's Hashem? Le San Cherev, Amar, he says, mi b'chol alai keha ratzis. V'chad Netzar, when he led the show, Amar, he says, oh, I'm going to go climb up and fight with that. Ela abam se'av. I'm going to go up to the clouds and run the show. The same thing with Chiram, the Chiram Melech Tzur. I gave him success. Amar, he says, mo yishev lekim yashavti, believe yam. Amaro, v'teima samsei rabiechon, gadol shenemar b'moshe v'aron. Moshe and Aaron's expressions of humility were even greater, on a higher level, more profoundly humble than even Avram Avinu. Yoyser b'ma shenemar b'Avram. Why? Because by Avram, he regarded himself as, at least he says, dust, ashes, it's still something. It's not nothingness, like Moshe v'aron says, we're nothing. As far as we're concerned, Dilu b'Avram, k'siv b'Avram, it says v'nech ofa ve'efer. Dilu b'Moshe v'Aaron, k'siv b'nachnu ma. It's even a lower level, a greater level of humility. V'Amarav, speaking about humility, v'Teim some say it was Rabbi Yechonu told us, Ein oilu meskayim. What keeps the world going? Ela b'shvil Moshe v'Aaron, because of Moshe v'Aaron and their humility. K'siv hacha v'nachnu ma. They express these words v'nachnu ma. We have another pasuk speaking about the foundation of the world. What keeps the world standing? Toil Earth, Hashem hangs the world. Al b'li ma. Rashi says, Al schus oisan shenechshev l'bli ma. The world stands on account and honor and the merit of those Moshe of Aaron who consider themselves b'li ma. Amar Rabbi Lo, Ein oilu meskayim. This can pertain to every one of us. What keeps the world existing? Ella, only on account of that person who in the heat of things, in a fight, a disagreement, boilam is atzma. Rashi says boilam means he like stuffs and closes his mouth, closed up. His mouth is closed. No response. No return insults. Keeps quiet, accepts it from Hashem, and moves on. Sheboilam is asmim shasmeriv. He doesn't get the last word, right? Shenema toila eretz. Hashem hangs the world al blima. A one who shuts himself down and does not respond. Rabbi Abu Omar, he has another twist. He says, Misha meisim asmim kumisha'inai. On whose merit does the world exist? On account of that person who considers himself she'ain kumisha'in, like he's non-existent. Shenamar mitachas, Rashi says, mitachas means Misha nidras tachas akol. He lets himself be trodden upon by everybody. He's just flat. Instead of flattening the other person, he flattens himself. Shenamar mitachas. This fellow who's considered mitachas just lies flat, unassuming, makes no waves. Just goes about and does his thing quietly. Israel is oilam. That's the Israel that upholds the world. Amar b'Yitzchak. Okay, further on this topic, Maidachsiv, how do we explain the pasuk? Ha'umnam, elam, so elam can be learned like an elam, like a mute person. Tzedek da'beirun, a person meant to speak like a mute person. How does that work? How do you speak if you... Meisharim tishpetu bnei adam. So he explains like this. Ha'umnam, he learns like a umnas, like a craft. A craftsman, he crafts his raw material into something really nice and beautiful, right? A person should do the same with his expressions, with his words. Craft them in a articulate way, in a meaningful way, in an impactful way. And express it with refinement, with tolerance, with softness, with humility. What type of craft does a person adopt in this world? What's our project in this world? He presents himself like an Elam, like a mute person. Yisrael Belsky, that's how once commenting on this Gemara, that apparently we're not speaking about just remaining quiet. That's not umnas, that's not craft, you don't have to design that, just keep quiet. That's the previous Gemara. During a fight, you just keep quiet, don't respond. By the way, not only do you not respond with insult, right? You know, different levels, by the way. I saw recently a nice shmuz from Gershon Edelstein in Shlita Eretz Yisrael. So he says that if you look at if you analyze the phrase of the Gemara elsewhere says that a person on a high level, right, he's ne'elavin ve'enan olvin. They accept insult and they don't respond. And then it says shemin harpasan ve'enan meshivin. They hear their insults and they don't respond. So he says like this. There are two levels here. The first is ve'enan olvin. They don't respond with insult. You insulted me. I yell back at you. Okay, at least that there. Yeah. The next level is shemin harpasan. They don't respond. Ve'enan meshivin. Mom, quiet. They don't even seek to justify themselves. You can do whatever you want, say what you want. It's omen hashamayim. I'm accepting it from heaven, and I don't need to get the last word. I don't have to explain myself to you. And if it's just going to exacerbate things and heat things up. So that's the other Gemara. This Gemara is a bit different. This Gemara is speaking about an umnus, a talent, a craft, who design, a craftsman designs things. Says Rabolsky, we're speaking about crafting our words, formulating them in a way that's impactful, that will accomplish, that will teach, that will convey with clarity and with refinement, with ease, with humility. Yosem atzma kilim. They say, not everything that we think are we supposed to say, not everything that you say are you supposed to write, etc., etc. Everything you write you're supposed to print, everything you print you're supposed to publish, and some say not everything that's published you're supposed to read. Okay, in any case, that's the general directive. A person should articulate his words, choose his word properly in a manner that's effective, that will accomplish. Yachal af l'divrei Torah kein. So what about when you're learning? When you're learning, it's a little different. There's a havamina, there's a maskana, there's give and take. Not everything is so clearly, formulated and, definitive. Yeah, you're right. When it comes to Torah, it's different. That's all part of the process to delve, to analyze, to discuss. Tamulayma, that's the next part of the pasuk, tzedek daber. When it comes to tzedek, which is divrei Torah, you can speak a bit more freely, Yochel yagis yadat. Okay, so when it comes to matters of Torah, you can speak, you're free to speak, so perhaps, do it in an imposing way, in a haughty way. Tamulayma, no, meisharim tishpetu bnei adam. Again, Rashi says meisharim means kimisha eretz chalaka, like a flat plain, shenech ledoris, easy to trot upon. Just be flat, lie low, let people trot upon you, give them the stage, give them the limelight. Amar Rab Zira, back to Kisi Adam. Yitema, some say it was Rabba Bar Yirmiyah. A big chiddush, Mekah Mechasin. So we're meant to use soil, earth, dirt, right? Let's say you have dirt from an Ir HaNitachas, a condemned city, a city which was accused and convicted of worshiping idol, and you have to burn this whole city down, all the houses, all the possessions. What about the, at this point in the Gemara, we're thinking that we're speaking about the ashes, the burnt ashes of the Ir HaNitachas. No problem, Machasan ba'ofer Ir HaNitachas. You can use that for Kisi Adam. Ask the Gemara, how? But how? Amai? Why is that allowed? Isur Ana who? It's Isur Ana. It's forbidden material. You can't have Ana from it. Amar Ziri, L'Nisrach must be speaking about the offer. We're not speaking about the ashes post-burning. We're talking about the soil on the ground. Loose soil sitting on the ground. The soil offer sitting on the ground. The chsiv, which is not really part of the burning process. It's not forbidden material. The chsiv, the pasuk says, you must burn anything that you can collect and burn, but not soil, you know, which needs to be detached off the ground. All its possessions, collect into the city square. So roughly, you burn it there. We learn from here that it only applies to movable possessions. Only those entities which are not lacking elokvitza, a strafe, only collection and burning, meaning it needs to undergo that two-stage process. Only those are included in the process of burning and isra hano. Yotza says, as opposed to the soil on the ground, shemchusa talisha, it needs three steps. It has to be detached, number one, kvitza, strafe, and then collect and then burn. So that doesn't, it's not covered by this directive, it's not asur b'hano, and you can use it for kisi adam. That's one explanation. The Rava Amar, Rava says, I'll take it even a step further. Let's go back. We're speaking about ashes. Ashes from forbidden materials. And as to your question, well, it's forbidden, it's asur b'hano, you can't use it for kisi adam. He says, guess what? I'm not having personal benefit from it. I'm using it to execute a mitzvah. A mitzvah is not considered personal benefit. It's a spiritual experience, fulfilling the will of Hashem. V'rav amar mitzvois lav lahonas nitnu, they're not given for hano, they're not considered a pleasurable experience. And therefore you can use even forbidden materials for a mitzvah. Chasam Sofer has a comment, he says, what do you mean? A mitzvah is a pleasurable experience, it's full of avas Hashem, it's simcha, it's the greatest experience in the world, if done properly. So what do you mean a mitzvah is not considered hano? So Chasam Sofer says a beautiful twist. He says like this, genius. He says, yeah, but the mitzvah is to fulfill the will of Hashem. So whether Hashem says, use the ashes and cover the blood, or Hashem says, refrain because it's forbidden and don't do it, that would also give you the same level of simcha. It's a matter of just fulfilling the will of Hashem, whichever way He says, do it or don't do it. So either way, even if I would be precluded from using this material, I would still have the same level of joy and happiness. So ultimately, even if I use it because the Torah allows me to use it, it's not this material that's granted me happiness. It's the experience of doing Hashem's will, whichever way. Beautiful, beautiful insight from the Chasam Sofer, Heilig Chasam Sofer. Okay, Yosef Rafina. So Rafina was sitting, the Ka'amal al Shmait, and saying over this chiddush from Rava, that one can use even forbidden materials in fulfillment of a mitzvah. He had a question. So Rav Chumi asked a question to Ravina. I have a braisa which seems to say otherwise. Shofar shelav eskecham leit kavoy. One should not be blowing with a shofar that belonged to Avodah Zarah. Now we'll assume my love. Let's assume him taka layatza. But even if he should go ahead, it doesn't work because it was forbidden material. So you see, you can't use Isur Hanah even for a mitzvah. Loi, no, im taka yatza. Of course, if he did it, it works. You shouldn't be using it, says Rashi, because it's mos. It's not becoming, it's not respectful to use of its own material for a mitzvah. But if he did it after the fact, it works. Because mitzvah is not considered Hanah. Okay, the next part of the braisa, lulav shel avodah zarah lo yitol. One should not shake a lulav of avodah zarah tree. My love, again, will assume not to layatza. If he did it, it doesn't work. Apparently, it gets in the way. No, lo, not to layatza. If you use it, it works. How could you say that about Tani? You have a braisa which clearly says it doesn't work. Taka layatza. He blew it, doesn't work. Not to shook it layatza. It's not yet. So now we're really stuck. Because here we say by the Kisi Adam that it's okay to use the ashes which are really forbidden. Why is it different than Tkiya Shrefa, than Lulav, where it doesn't work? Amar Vash, Yachi Yashta, how could you compare the two scenarios? Hasam, over there, we turn to Amar Beis, over there meaning by the Shofar and by the Lulav, Shi'ura Ba'inam. Listen to this distinction. By Shofar, there's a minimum size requirement. Rashi says it has to be long enough to fit out of your fists on both sides. So you grab with your fist and it has to be long enough to stick out on both. There's a minimum shear. By lulav, we all know, this is a Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah, right? It has to be 3 tefachim, 4 tefachim high. There's a quantitative element there. Shiro b'inan. And since it's the wrong material, it's of a desired material which is slated for destruction, for burning, right? It's no longer a functioning entity. It's no longer slated for this function other than being destroyed and burnt. In which case, you don't look at this for Tefach Lulav as a single functioning entity which will serve the purpose of shaking. It's not, it doesn't have that unison, it doesn't have that togetherness. It's like broken into pieces. It's not slated for use. It's just a bunch of molecules that are sort of situated next to each other. They're not serving together in unison. They're not a functioning entity. They're meant for destruction and burning. It's chopped up, it's ground up, michtas, it's fully ground up, pulverized, shiur, the shiur, the size. The entity is totally pulverized. It's not a functioning entity. It can't serve as a four tefach lulav. It can't accomplish what a four tefach lulav is supposed to do. It's not meant for that function, it's meant to be destroyed. So the shiur, the size factor, the quantity factor is a non-entity. As opposed to kisi adam, perhaps the Gemara is just expressing it like in a derech tzachas, like a sort of poetic way. As opposed to the ashes for covering blood, kol kama de michtas, even though it's forbidden matter, and it's like chopped up and granuled up, it's like powdered up. If anything, it's even better. Mali lekisi, the more chopped, the better. It's going to cover the blood. It's probably in a figurative way. In any case, the point is that here we're not speaking about, you don't need a certain size of ashes, a certain size. As long as you cover the blood, you're good. And it's covered, properly covered. Even if you say, I know it's covered. Okay, so that's the answer. Okay, so we had halacha that for kisi adam, you can use material from ir nedachas. We have two ways to explain it. Either we're talking about the soil, or we're talking about the ashes, which are really usher. So either the soil, which was never usur, was not included in the, or the ashes of burnt material, which is really usur. But in contrast to lulav and shofar, where there's a size quantity factor, so these things cannot be used because they can't contribute to the, quantitative requirement and size, element. But by kisi adam, that's not a factor, and it's okay. Hadron loch kisi adam. Okay, now we shift gears again to a brand new mitzvah of gidah nosha. So it's the nerve or the tendon, right, that was dislocated by the malach, right, the malach of Esav, who wrestled with Yaakov Avinu when he was on his own, right, crossed the river there, and they struggled all night until the morning when the malach went back upstairs, and since he got just that much, he dislocated his gid hanosha, that's why it's called gid hanosha. Nosha means it was removed, it was pushed out of place, it was dislocated. On account of that story, we refrain from eating gid hanosha. Now, there's a big question in the Gemara later on in the Mishnah Daf Kuf. When was this mitzvah activated? Because the pasuk really states it back then by the story. It says, Al kein, because of this episode, Lo yechlu bnei Yisrael will not consume es gid hanosha. This nerve, Asher al kaf hayorech, which was situated on the round. Section of meat on the yarech, on the thigh bone area, adayim azeh, we don't eat it until today, kinoga b'kaf yarech yachav b'gid hanosha, because the malach tampered with that area. So some learn that it was only activated after Kabbalah HaTorah, although the pasuk states it back then, because it was historically triggered by that episode, but practically it was only applied after Matan Torah to Klal Yisrael. And others hold that Rabbi Yehuda holds that actually it was started then, way back then. The Bnei Yaakov got that mitzvah at that point, and then it continued on through Matan Torah until today. Okay, we'll get to that. Beis Hashem says the Mishnah, Gidah Nasha, so the prohibition to eat this Gidah Nasha, Noyeg replies wherever you live, Ba'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael, B'chutz La'aretz, outside Eretz Yisrael, B'fnei Abayis, while the Midrash was standing, B'shalei 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 B'shalei, after destruction, B'chulin applies to privately owned animals, Ube Mugdashin. Okay, this is going to be a critical word, which will be discussed in the Gemara in great length. So it applies to Karbonis as well. Now it applies to what type of animals? All animals. V'noyeg B'heimah B'chaya, whether domesticated or the wild type, B'yerach Shal Yemin, or B'yerach Shal Smol. It applies to the gid on the right thigh of the animal, and the left eye as well. But it doesn't apply to birds, to chickens, because they don't really have a kaf hayorech, which is described in the pasuk. The thigh area is more nimble, it's not as pronounced, not as round. Meshein loy kaf doesn't have like that round, circular chunk of meat. V'noig b'shlil. Now what about an unborn animal? It applies there as well. So you open up the mother animal after shkita, you find the ben pekua, full term ben pekua. The gid hanosha is is asr. And this is in line with the shita of Rabbi Meir, who says that a full term ben pekua needs its own shkita. So it goes hand in hand. If it's its own shkita, it's its own animal. It's its own animal, so it has all the elements of an animal, including gira nasha and chela, right? But Rabbi Yehuda, Imer, no, he says einanay b'shlil, doesn't apply to a shlil. V'chal b'imuta, and its fat is mutter as well, because you see, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when you open up the shechted mother, you find a full term unborn inside. He's covered by the mother's shkita, so he's considered like a blob of meat, part of the mother's entity. Without differentiation, he doesn't have what we call the gira nasha. He doesn't have those, they're not classified as gid and chelav. Okay. Ve'ein ha-tabocha ne'man al gid-anasha. You can't trust the butcher that he removed the gid-anasha. It's a difficult procedure. Rashi says, she'terech u'lehem, it's difficult to go and, trace all the, offshoots, and it's a difficult procedure, so we don't trust them. Ve'achacham ayrim ne'man olav ve'alachelav, just like we trust them on the chelav, we trust them on the gid, he has a trustworthiness on that as well. Okay, so the Mishnah says Gid Anasha applies to carbon animals as well. Now, why would I think otherwise? I mean, Mekdashin, Pshita, obviously it applies to a carbon like a Shlomim. Why not? Mishum Agdashe, just because he made it, he turned to the animal, he said it's a Shlomim, suddenly it loses the Gid Anasha status that it already had from birth. Mishum Agdashe, just because he made it Kodesh, Pakale Isra Gidmine, the Isra of the Gid disappears. I mean, why would you say so? Why does the Mishnah bother even mentioning the Gid Anasha applies to a Hekdesh? Okay, so we'll have several proposals. V'chitem, perhaps we can say like this. At the point in the Mishnah is, first of all, we have the following premise. Yesh begidin b'naisen tam. The Tana of our Mishnah is of the opinion that the Gid Anasha has taste, has flavor. It's not just a dry, a tasteless entity which the Torah forbids, as an exception, because of its gid anasha status. No, it's considered like every other flesh. It has taste, it has flavor. Bin nois in time, it can impart flavor. Let's say it's cooked together with a thigh while still inside, it will impart flavor, and we have to deal with it like, forbidden flavor that got, transported. So if it's more than a 60th, it would forbid the mix. So the gid has that ability to impart flavor. It's a tasty entity. It's like flesh. And the point of the Mishnah is to stress that v'asu iser mukdashin v'chayla iser gid. Yeah, of course we know that there's iser gid anasha by mukdashin. That's not the focal point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is highlighting that there will be a double decker iser on the gid anasha, because once you make it hegdish, and a person, let's say, eats it in an unauthorized manner, so he diverted, hegdish for himself, he ate it when he shouldn't, so there's a violation of, me'ilav, of eating hegdash for no, and that's on top of the pre-existing iser gid anasha that was applicable to that sinew. And that's only because, once again, the sinew has taste, has flavor, is regarded as a food entity. In which case, then, when the animal becomes kodesh, aside from the iser gid, the iser hegdash comes on top of that as well, because it's a broader iser, it has a broader scope. Okay, that's up for discussion. It's a whole different discussion. Why, how we ever get a double layer iser? But in any case, that's the point of the mission. First of all, to tell us that gid didn't have flavor, and secondly, that the second iser that arrives later can land on the previous iser. You can't say that's the intention of the Mishnah, because if we analyze the phraseology of the Mishnah, it would seem just the opposite. Hai mukdash noy begid mibayle. If anything, the Mishnah should say it differently. The Mishnah should say that the iser of Hegdish comes and lands on the pre-existing iser of the gid. Right, that's your main point here, right? That number two comes and lands on number one. Mishnah doesn't say like that. Mishnah says Isur Gid Hanasha applies to Hegdash as well. It sounds like we're going in the other direction. That the Chiddush is, and that's not really understood. What's the point of saying that? Elo Kasavar. So let's shift gears. Next attempt at understanding the Mishnah. Kasavar ain begid nice and tam. Just the opposite. The Tana of our Mishnah holds that a gid is not a flavorable entity. It's like a tasteless piece of wood, rashes, like an eitz. Nevertheless, it's asur, because the Torah made an exception. Even something which is tasteless can be asur on account of gid anasha. Okay, fine. But ube mekdashin, but when you turn this animal into a shlamim, the gid will only retain that single isur. Isur gid ika. Isur mekdashin leka. There's no special extra isur of hegdish on that gid. That only applies to edible materials, which the gid doesn't have. So perhaps that's the lesson in our Mishnah, to tell us that even if we have a shlamim here, don't think that the gir is usher on two accounts. No, it's only usher on account of gir and usher. Only on account of that isr. Isr and gushim lek. But that's not going to work either. V'savar tana didon ein begidin leis and tam. So you're suggesting that our tana is based on a premise that a gir doesn't have flavor. That's incorrect. V'atnan. Because if you look further, later on, you know, in the Mishnayos, we have a Mishnah which clearly states otherwise. V'atnan yorech shen espashel b'gid hanasha. If a fellow cooked the entire thigh, forgot that he left the gid hanasha inside, so does it affect the whole mix? Well, it depends on its size, on its percentage. If it's less than a 1/60, it's nullified, but otherwise it's trouble. If it has the ability, if it's big enough to impart flavor on the rest, it forbids the entire mix. Clearly, we're working with a premise that a gid has flavor. So that's out. Okay, back to the question. What's the Mishnah teaching us when saying that gid hanasha applies to hekdesh? Isn't that obvious? Ella, rather, let's shift gears. Instead of speaking about the mother animal, we're speaking about the offspring of a hekdesh animal. Right? The animal born from a shlamim. Elach of Vlad is Kachamaskin. We're speaking about the offspring of a kodesh animal. Okay. And the Mishnah is teaching us that both statuses will apply to the gid hanasha of the offspring. And Rashi explains. As opposed to what? Look, don't think that only the Isra of Hegdish applies, because gid comes much later. If you hold that the gid does not apply while it's still unborn, like the Yeshita of Rabbi Yehuda, so the Isra of gid hanasha will only arrive later. Sequentially, the Isra of Kachim comes first. And it's too late for the gid to come and land on the Kodesh. So maybe that would be an option. The answer is no. Because Savar Noig Bishlil, first of all, he holds that even a Shlil, unborn animal, already has the Isra of Gid Hanasha. Because he holds like that Shita that a Gid Hanasha is also even by a Shlil. That's number one. Because Savar, Veloda is Kachim, Bimei Iman in Kedoshim. And he holds that the kedusha of the vlad, the offspring of a carbon animal, arrives when b'mei iman, while still in the mother's entity, before birth, b'mei iman in kedusha. Okay, so as soon as the embryo is formed, there's already kedusha. In which case, both of these elements, the kedusha and the isra gid, arrive simultaneously. There's no issue of, you know, double layer and, you know, preemption. No, they both come at the same time. The Isra Gid, the Isra of Gid, the Isra of Mugdashin, the Isra of Mugdashin, Hadia Dadikas, he arrived at the same moment in its unborn status. And that's the point of the Mishnah, to teach us that both Isurim arrive at the same moment, be Tziras HaUber, when the Uber is formed inside. And that explains why both Isurim will apply, and one will not interfere with the other. Says the more, you can't say that. Once again, running into issues. How could you say it? This part of the mission, in the beginning, speaking about a shlil, unborn animal. That's the next part of the Mishnah. If you look at the next part of the Mishnah, there it discusses a shlil. It applies to a shlil. Rabbi disagrees. Machlal Resh, apparently the discussion up to that point was not speaking about a shlil. Lav b'shlil. Machlal Resh, lav b'shlil. Speaking about a regular animal, not a shlil. No, the Mishnah means like this. It's explaining itself. The Mishnah starts off Umigdash, Umigdashim, Tomar Shlil. And the Mishnah elaborates and explains, actually, it's not universal, it's really subject to Machlaikas, and sort of completes the discussion. This point is really a Machlaikas to Rabbi the Rabban. Okay, that settles that. But it's not going to work. Umimot says Amrs, Litharvayu, Bahadi, Adad, Kaasu. How can you suggest that both elements arrive at the same time? So you're indicating that the Isra of Mugdashim arrives simultaneous with the Isra of Gira Nasha, take a look at this Mishnah, which will tell us otherwise. Then actually the flesh element of the fetus only develops later. First we have the skeletal arrangement, the sinews and the tendon, and then comes the flesh. So what came first? What preempted what? Gira Nasha was there before the Basar even arrived. It doesn't leave room for the Mugdashin to arrive. It locks it out. There's no room for you, Mr. Isser number two. But now we have a Mishnah. We know that a Nazar, he undertook to shave his, to grow his hair and all that. If he encounters Tumah, he has to shave and undo his whole, and redo the whole system. But not every Tumah triggers a redo. Only severe Tumahs, al Ameis, if he touched a corpse, a full corpse, al Kazayis Ameis, or even a Kazayis portion of a Ameis. And the question is, isn't that redundant? I mean, once you say a Kazayis undoes his status, certainly a full mace. Why? Because the question we had on this Mishnah was, well, a Kazayis min Ameis Megalech, if he's Megalech, even touching a Kazayis, even that requires a do-over. Al-Kuli Lekoshkan, certainly if he touches a full mace. What's the point of, or Rabbi Yechanan comes to Rabbi Yechanan and explains. It's not a repetition. There are two options, Kazayis min Ameis and a full mace. As to your question, a full mace automatically has a kazayis. No, it's not so simple. You can have a fetus at the early stages of development, which appears like a full, you know, skeletal structure, but hasn't yet grown tendons and flesh. So if one should somehow come into contact with that lifeless entity, that requires a redo. The Mishnah must be referring to a mace which doesn't yet have a kazayis of basar, a little nafel. A miscarriage, Shalei Nikshru Evar V'Gidin, whose Gidin, whose tendons haven't yet developed, and his Evarim, his limb, haven't yet come together with tendons. And Rashi adds, V'Adayin Enil of Kazayis Basar, which is the punchline over here, doesn't yet have a Kazayis of Basar, and still, if another comes into contact with that, he's tummy. We turn to the next page. Alma. So what do we see from here? Okay, that's sort of a side point. Let's come back home. How does that pertain to us? Apparently, it's a process, stage by stage. First you have a skeletal structure, then come the gidin, then come the basar. Almost, apparently, Isur Mugdashin, so going back to this unborn animal within the shlamim, right? What happens first? Isur Mugdashin Kadim, first comes the Isur Hegdish. Rashi says, Mishosh Anoitza, once the formation begins, once he's, you know, formed, he already gets Kedusha, he's considered like an animal. Before having developed a Giranosha. So the Giranosha is second in the ring. There's no room for him. How could you say that both the Isurim arrive at the same time and both apply to the unborn, the Vlad, the offspring of a Kodesh? Says the more you're right, sequentially you're right, but ultimately, it will leave room for the Gira Nasha, and both will apply. Why? Afal gab the Isra Mugdashin Kadim, even though you're right, 100% right. The Isra of Hegdish, its carbon identity, so to speak, arrives first. Kadim, Isra Mugdashin Kadim. Still, Asa Isra Gid V'chayla Laya, the Isra of Gira Nasha that comes later, can land on the Isra of Hegdish. Why? Because its scope is broader. Gira Nasha is a broader mitzvah. Shekeni Suri Noyig B'Vnei Noyach, because it applies way back from the time of Yaakov Avinu when his descendant, his family was called B'Nei Noyach. Well, not yet, given the status of B'Nei Yisrael. So the Isra of Gira Nasha predates Matan Torah. And that sort of broadness of scope, that gives it an advantage and allows it to be added even to a pre-existing Kodesh Isra. So even though the animal is already Kodesh, you would think there's no room for more. No. Gira Nasha, which is a broader entity, can latch itself onto that as well. Says the Gemara, hold it. Man Shamas Lehi Svara. Who's the one that promotes this position? That Isra Gira Nasha had already applied from the time of Yaakov Avinu. That's from Yehuda, right? Which is discussed later in Afkov. But our mission is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. So we're stuck again. Why? The Tani Noig with Behemah Machaya, Be'erach Shemin, and Be'erach Shosma. The Mishnah says it applies to Behemah Machaya, right and left thighs. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says it only applies to one of the thighs. Well, okay, Hai Tana, our Tana is an independent opinion. He picked and chose. In one element, he went like Rabbi Yehuda, that the Isra Ger Anasha started from prehistoric times, and in terms of which gid, he had a different view. Okay, so that can work. They're not really, contradictory. Hai Tana, our Tana, Val Mishnah, Sova Le'o, Kavasei Bechada. On one account, he adopts Rabbi Yehuda's position, that the Ger Anasha started from way back. Upalgle Bechada. And regarding, which one, he disagreed with him. He says that it applies to both sides. Okay. That can work. Says the Gemara, hold it. But Eimer de Shamas le Rabbi Yehuda bitmeya. We're basing ourselves on Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Isser Ger Anasha is a broader Isser because, it predates and therefore it applies even to an animal which is unkosher, despite it having a pre-existing, Isser status because of its unkosher status. Isser Ger Anasha come and latch itself on. But Tmeya, the Isser Lav, because Isser of unkosher animal is merely a Lav. So you can understand, Ger Anasha comes and latches on as well. But Kachim, here we're talking about a different story. We're talking about Karbanis. Kachim, the Isser Karis. The Isser of violating Karbanis has much more grave ramifications. There's Karis, potential Karis involved. Pigal, Naisar, all kinds of Karis-related transgressions that are attached to Karbanis. Misha Amaslei. Does then Rabbi Yehuda agree to add Ger Anasha to even Kachim? I mean, that's a stretch. So back to our question. How in the world do we have Isser Ger Anasha applying to the Vlad of a Karban? Once we establish that the Isser Hegdash comes first, it leaves no room for Isser Ger Anasha to arrive afterwards. Says the Martutu Ritzim. Ella, rather, hacha b'mevakeres askinim. We're not speaking about a flat of a shlum. We're speaking about a newborn kosher animal. We're speaking about kedushas bechoyer, that type of a carbon. The berechem kodesh. Where we all know that the kedusha of that newborn only happens when it's born, peterechem, as it comes out. So in this case, the kedusha does not predate the Ger Anasha. The kedusha of the bechor arrives at birth, and so does Isser Ger Anasha. If you hold that Ger Anasha only comes after birth, or as Rashi adds, certainly if the Isser Ger Anasha was present even in its unborn state, in that sense it's an easy case to make, that the Isser Kachim comes and latches on, because the Kachim is a greater Isser, it's a more severe Isser, a broader Isser, like we explained, it's courage belief. That explains that halach. Another way to explain the Mishnah would be that in fact we're speaking Lo'ilam b'vlodeis kachim. Let's go back to the offspring of a carbon. But the Tana holds b'aviyoson hinkdoshim. The Kedusha doesn't arrive in its unborn state only when it's actually born. Similar to the Bechor. It's based on how you learn the Pesukim, Ashiyu l'chay l'avlodeis, while it's born. So again, the same story. You can fully understand why, at the end of the day, you have both factors, both elements, both statuses present on that Ger Anasha. The Isser Ger Anasha and Isser of Kodesh. And that's the point of our Mishnah. The Isser Ger Anasha applies to Mekdashim. We're talking about the offspring of a Hegdash, right? The question was, obviously, why would you think Ger Anasha doesn't apply to Mekdash? There are all kinds of theories, all kinds of attempts at explaining it. Ultimately, the bottom line is we're talking about an offspring, either a Bechor, or a lot of regular Kodesh, where the Kedusha only happens upon birth, which accommodates both Yisurim, Yisur of the Kodesh, Yisur Ger Anasha as well. Okay, in the previous side of the page, we learned about Avraham Avinu's expression of humility, expression of honesty, and b'schus that we were zeichah to all kinds of good things. We spoke about the ingrained trait of humility within our nation, within our leaders, Hashem so values and endears. We learned about being humble, b'shas meriva, in a time of contention, a time of discord, to be humble, easygoing, tolerant, full of amunah, that it's all min hashamayim, there's no need to respond, there's no need to hit back, and that brings great merits for yourself and for the world at large. We spoke about using the material of Yiranidachas for Kisi Adam as well. All the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rabbah.